You're listening to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor.
Mary Sue Coleman was inaugurated as the University of Michigan's 13th president on March 27, 2003. She advised her audience to look at your roots to discover your future.
Thank you, Regent Deitch, and to all our regents for inviting me to lead this remarkable university. It's three campuses, it's many schools and colleges. Greetings to all of you who traveled here today, whether your journey took you across campus or across the globe. I come before you today to pledge my commitment to expand the excellence of all the endeavors of this magnificent community. This day is a day both to cast a look backward and to reach forward, contemplating our valued traditions along with the future aspirations of the university. One of the joys for me to hear today is to be able to surround myself with my own history. Joining us are many members of my family whose love and dedication have been without boundaries. Many of you know my husband, Ken, who has joined the ranks of Michigan students and who is experiencing the intellectual challenges and exhilaration that are shared by so many of those whose lives have been touched by our university. My mother, Margaret Wilson, has enjoyed the delights of winter in Ann Arbor with us. Our son, Jonathan, and his wife, Ami, are here, and my family has another cause for celebration today, Jonathan's 32nd birthday. I am deeply grateful that so many friends and colleagues from our lives at the universities of Kentucky, North Carolina, New Mexico, and Iowa have traveled here to share in this celebration. Their support and friendship have nurtured and sustained us in both good and trying times. We have been blessed beyond measure by their modeling of the notion of an intellectual community, and I delight in their collective presence today. I'd like to ask all of them, my extended family, my sisters and relatives, my friends from other places, to stand and be recognized. Would you please? And up here. And of course, I am surrounded by my future as well, the magnificent community of students, faculty, staff, regents, and alumni of the University of Michigan. Your talents are large, and your ambitions even larger. Every day you inspire me and instruct me. It is a privilege to join you. The formal installation of a new president is a moment when an entire institution reflects on its mission and its priorities. All of us associated with the University of Michigan are constantly assessing priorities. Such moments can never be fully enumerated because they occur simultaneously throughout every minute of every day across a complex and diverse campus. Whenever a student is choosing a major, a department is choosing a new faculty member, or I am appointing a vice president, this university is making choices. All of you who are longtime members of the University of Michigan community have made a multitude of decisions that contribute to our current stature. Today's university represents the accumulated choices of almost 200 years of history, of hundreds of thousands of individuals who have studied here, taught here, done research here, or provided service here. This rich history has built us an enormous web of alumni and external supporters that sustain all of us. It is easy to think of this place as an aggregation of buildings and a congregation of faculty. But a university is so much more ethereal than that. A university is more a concept than a place. And we bring that concept to life every day, at every hour of the day, in the classrooms, in the laboratories, even in the hallways. One of the great marvels of a university is that it provides a culture where the dialogue of scholars can flourish. These dialogues range from the interaction within freshman seminars to the collegial arguments that last long into the night and persist across the decades. This life of the mind is the quintessence of a university and soars beyond our physical walls. But today, we find ourselves in the midst of a troubling time. Our country is at war, and many in our community are concerned about the welfare of our nation and of all involved nations, as well as for family members and comrades directly affected by this military action. In addition, our nation and our state are struggling economically. As a result, we are dealing with unfamiliar budgetary constraints every day. How will we keep building and cultivating this university that we hold in such high regard? I believe we can provide strength to ourselves and to the world by upholding the two notions I suggested at the outset, highlighting the traditions we value, while at the same time advancing our aspirations. As Professor Jackson noted in his address, there is a symbol from Ghana known as the Sankofa, which embodies a message relevant to us today. The Sankofa is a bird that's moving forward while its head is turned backward. The proverb associated with the symbolism of the bird is, "Look to your roots in order to discover your future." Look to your roots in order to discover your future. The glory of the University of Michigan resides in its ability to reinvent itself continually, to cherish its roots while inventing its future. I've now had time to contemplate the past of this great institution and to consider our future. As I stretch my hand toward the unlimited possibilities, I want to reach back to our past with my other hand. We are not just a great university, we are a great public university, and that entails responsibilities to many constituencies. The University of Michigan was established in Detroit in 1817 to educate the young men of this state with a generous gift of land from three Native American tribes. But within a few decades, it had been translated to this campus in Ann Arbor and transformed into a university dedicated not just to teaching, but to the discovery and creation of knowledge. Then and now, public universities have had a compelling contract with society, a quid pro quo. In other words, because the state benefits from having educated citizens, the state supports it with public funds. The universities, in turn, have a reciprocal responsibility to the states. In this regard, our roots are not only deep, but also broad, extending hundreds of miles and hundreds of years. One of the earliest proponents of public universities was Thomas Jefferson, who was determined to create what he termed a natural aristocracy, an educated, egalitarian population that would not rely on the older social order of inherited wealth or of birth into the aristocracy. No one knew better than Jefferson how difficult it would be to negotiate a social contract of public support for public universities. It took him decades to convince Virginia to fund such an enterprise. In fact, the University of Michigan had already been in operation for 8 years before the University of Virginia opened in 1825. Jefferson's attempt to shape a publicly supported university revealed the tensions of funding and priorities that we still face today. When confronted with a proposed legislative budget that was not adequate to his vision, Jefferson, a former governor of Virginia himself, wrote repeatedly to state legislators imploring them with this request: "I think the legislature might be induced to make a further appropriation towards the completion and endowment of the university. Some part of the money appropriated to the primary schools might be more usefully applied to the university." Some tensions have not changed in 200 years. Like Thomas Jefferson and Virginia, the state of Michigan established an ambitious plan for a new type of university, a public university, and one dedicated to new types of education, especially in the sciences, that would serve the public interest. The state of Michigan established a curriculum and hired a faculty, but did not make provisions for hiring a president. Somehow, the University of Michigan managed to operate very well without a formally appointed president for its first 35 years. But the Regents finally did hire a president who set the university on an ambitious course that we still attempt to sustain and surpass. In his inaugural speech of 1852, our first president, Henry Philip Tappan, told the public he wanted to bring distinguished scholars to the faculty, he wanted to enlarge the library and the laboratory, and he wanted to establish an art gallery. He wanted the university to move from the dissemination of knowledge to research. With declaratory strokes of the pen, Tappan set down our roots, concisely stated, yet broadly conceived. Think of what he described that we enjoy today. He wanted distinguished scholars, a marvelous library, world-class laboratories, and a home for the arts. And underpinning all of these, a university that continually expands the boundaries of knowledge. We have attained President Tappan's vision and much more than he ever could have imagined. Two decades later, President James Angel began his long and illustrious term by reinforcing the mutual benefit of state and university when he said in his inaugural address, "The state and the university should feel their interests are identical. The prosperity of the university is bound up in that of the state. Michigan cannot grow stronger, wiser, and happier without strengthening her principal seat of learning." Every new president of any organization has previous presidents peering over her shoulders. On our campus, they look to me from the great halls which bear their names, Tappan, Angel, Fleming, and more. Six of them hover as gargoyles that scrutinize me when I enter the law quadrangle. Two of them are peering over my shoulders right now. As we consider our history, I want to recall the contributions of my predecessors who are here today, Presidents Emeriti Lee Bollinger and James Duderstadt. All of us owe them an immense debt of gratitude. Contemplating their legacies and reflecting on the core ideals of this university has revealed to me the enduring strength the University of Michigan has valued. These are historic values that we must cherish. To start, we must substantially bolster the multidisciplinarity that the University of Michigan has long nurtured in departments and colleges throughout the three campuses, in the humanities, arts, sciences, professional schools, and programs such as our distinguished Institute for Social Research. I've seen the benefits that result when scholars cross the boundaries of their disciplines to forge new alliances and new ideas. I want to encourage the productive synthesis of ideas and cultures at the boundaries of academic disciplines to create new models of learning and discovery. Consider this. Our engineers and our dentists are devising new ways to re-engineer the tissues of our mouths. Our mathematicians and physicians are discovering ways to model, diagnose, and treat epidemic diseases. And our experts in genetics and ethics are establishing a new world of medical care in the age of genetic information. These are creative syntheses launched before my arrival. My intention is that we shall see many more. The research and creativity of the University of Michigan have a global impact, unfolding in our state and beyond its borders. As you will hear again in the symposium this afternoon, we are indeed a university of the world. America's great universities must think about an array of issues. How do we reconcile preservation of our environment with economic growth? Business people around our state are thinking about this topic. We should be also. How do we maintain privacy and civil liberties in the information age? This is a dilemma not to be left to the ACLU and the federal government. We must become even more engaged in this area. How do we structure the ethical controls over science and technology? This issue should not be left to congressional staffers. We should be occupied in this process as well. The University of Michigan has emerged as a leader in no small part because of its public character. We will not be working alone. To address broader issues will require collaborations far beyond Ann Arbor, Dearborn, and Flint. The University of Michigan can bring vast intellectual resources to bear on our resolve to work on behalf of society. Our interdisciplinary and collaborative traditions are greatly enhanced by the impact of information technology, which is transforming all areas of learning. We routinely get information from electronic sources all over the world. We can tear apart and reconstruct digital representations of everything, from works of art to the human genome, from the symphonies of Mozart to the elementary particles of nature. Michigan is a leader in such technologies through the vision of people like President Duderstadt, who saw the implication of that technology and invested in it. Yet ironically and thankfully, the glorious abundance of the virtual has created an even greater longing for the real, the original painting, the personal letter, the live performance of music or theater. We still want to sit with a crowd of friends and strangers to have a communal experience. Perhaps the most exciting breakthrough is the realization that we do not live in an age of virtual or real, but in an era where the power of information technology allows us to create entirely new knowledge and beauty at the intersection of the virtual and real. Technology enhances access to and appreciation of our Museum of Art, our Bentley Historical Library, and our planned Miller Theater. It enlivens theater and music performances. It allows the cultural, artistic, and scholarly resources of the University of Michigan to be open to the world in ways never before possible. Our programs in music, art, design, architecture, and urban planning can now be partners with our programs in computer science and information, creating an exciting world of learning in which old constraints are overcome and new opportunities abound. Just as our past has included such stellar moments as the multi-year residency of the poet Robert Frost in the 1920s, and more recently of the Royal Shakespeare Company, our future will lie in our ability to combine these experiences with the communication possible via technology. Just as we will seek ways to cross boundaries in the humanities, sciences, and professional schools, I want to find new ways to embrace and enliven the Life Sciences Initiative. During President Bollinger's tenure, the university made a significant commitment to the life sciences because this frontier of science promises a transformation of our world equivalent to space exploration of the 1960s, nuclear science in the 1950s, and previous revolutions in medicine that we now take for granted, resulting in antibiotics, vaccines, and organ transplants. Our institutional dedication to this enterprise grows out of our history, which has long embodied an uncommon breadth and depth of scholarly excellence and interdisciplinary traditions. Our current aspirations for the life sciences have always gone beyond a new research building. Our Young Institute extends widely across the campus because the work of the life sciences flourishes best outside interdisciplinary boundaries, outside of disciplinary boundaries, such as our program in life sciences, values, and society. We have a distinctive Michigan initiative that brings together the human as well as the technical aspects of this enterprise, in short, bringing life to the life sciences and inviting a fuller collaboration of biomedical scientists with those who study humanity, including programs for both graduate and undergraduate students across the campus. The information that our scientists will generate, now locked in the secrets of the genome, will be of secondary consequence to what we will do with that information as a people and a nation. We will need to find ways to break through our self-defined boundaries of academic units in order to achieve these partnerships inviting our social scientists, humanists, and legal scholars to articulate, illustrate, and debate the humanistic values and policy implications that will surely emerge from the scientific discoveries. Now is the time to invest in the rigorous discipline that it will take to bring the potential of Michigan's initiatives in the life sciences to fruition. Another distinctive feature of this university is its commitment to undergraduates. A recent faculty report described undergraduate education as a journey of self-discovery and highlighted our responsibility to provide students with navigational tools for that journey. I enjoy this imagery and the resourcefulness of the report, but I want to expand on its challenge. The multidisciplinarity which characterizes our research enterprise, if pursued equally seriously in our undergraduate curriculum, will bestow enormous advantage on our students. The essence of a liberal arts education provides the reflective reservoir of learning upon which our graduates depend for full intellectual and cultural lives, no matter what field they have chosen for their life's work. These cross currents provide tremendous opportunities for our students. Where else can an engineering student work with radiologists from the medical school and archaeologists from LSNA to use an MRI to analyze an ancient mummy, as our students did this year at our wonderful Kelsey Museum of Archaeology? But we are just as committed to excellence of the educational experience of our students. We are also committed to keeping our programs as accessible as possible to all. In this arena, we face a special set of challenges because we ourselves are being challenged. The University of Michigan is engaged in a long-term, historic struggle to preserve admissions policies that serve the widest possible array of communities in the United States and the world. This is a fight that the institution has been willing to wage because it is our pledge to create a broadly diverse university community. The principle we are defending has become part of the fabric of our society as reflected in the broad spectrum of support for our cases inside and outside the academy. Everyone here today knows that the final legal battle is about to begin at the highest court in the nation. We are asking the court to affirm America by reaffirming affirmative action. Whatever the outcome may be, as an institution, we shall remain committed to the ideal of a diversely interactive community dedicated to the highest standards. If we win, we will have a hollow victory unless we renew our commitment to learning with and learning from diverse others every day, in every action, in every classroom, in every living arrangement, in every research and public service endeavor. The nation will be looking to the University of Michigan for leadership and inspiration, however the decision of the court is crafted. Our challenge now is to exhibit the discipline it takes to transform the vision of a diverse learning community into the reality of ensuring that students and all members of our community are in fact valued. But even as we make our community more welcoming to all, we must remember that we are committed to upholding the philosophical challenges that everyone must face in a rigorous quest for knowledge. In pursuing an advanced education, all students can and should be challenged and must learn to deal with the discomfort of conflicting opinions. Our students understand this point. One of our students related to me his own reaction to this discomfort just 2 weeks ago. He told me that in his small Michigan hometown, everyone agreed, everyone was the same. He reported that he was startled to come to our campus and find himself immediately challenged, first by a street preacher on the diag, who told him he was eternally damned, then by classmates who did not share his point of view on many issues. But after his initial surprise, this young man was reveling in the experience, in confronting worlds he had never before encountered, which were enriching his life in unexpected ways. At the University of Michigan, we have room for all points of view. We have room for students, staff, and faculty from all nations and of all races. An enduring community grows out of the creative synthesis of all of our confrontations and reconciliations, as it does in any family. Clearly, the history of the university is replete with the many choices we all have made, which have brought this institution to the pinnacle of American higher education. Every one of you, our faculty, our students, our staff, our regents, our alumni, and our supporters, are making choices that will affect the destiny of this great university. I ask you to bring your accumulated wisdom to bear on the choices that will ensure an unlimited future. Let us remember the proverb of the Sankofa: look to your roots to discover your future. Let us remember the ideals of Thomas Jefferson, who wanted to build a university in the way he describes here, on a plan so broad and liberal and modern as to be worth patronizing with public support. Let us remember the passion of President Angel, who told us in his inaugural address, "Dynasties come and go, kingdoms and states rise and fall, but amid all the vicissitudes of earthly affairs, the great universities are the most vital and enduring of all human institutions." Today, I stand before you with great pride. I was summoned to serve a great university. I pledge that I will work with you to assure that it is even a greater university when I depart. Thank you.
This has been a production of the University of Michigan News Service. Visit us on the web at www.umich.edu/news.